We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
This is AJ and Dusty.
Let's go, Dutch! What's up, Oregon?
With Coin 6 sportscaster AJ McCord.
You never believe you're out of a fight. You never believe you're out of a game. Where does that come from?
It's having some pride, having belief.
And Dusty, the fan man, Hera.
Jonathan Smith, Oregon State head football coach. Do you have a fullback that it will run his head through a wall?
Yeah, we've got that thought.
AJ and Dusty on 1080.
I proved it up. I'm not running from nobody.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two. We got Monday Musings coming up in about 10 minutes from now. Things in the sports world that stuck out to you. Ooh, text him, 503-250-1080. And then Gary Trent Jr. is sure to make you mad.
Or sad.
Well, I mean, if you text into the show in the hour number one, yeah, you'll probably get upset at what Gary Trent Jr. had to say, because there's a lot of upset Blazer fans out there in Blazer world.
Yep.
A lot of feelings happening right now on social media and our fan text line, 503-250-1080. But you have feelings. Use them there. It's okay.
We're here for you.
Yeah.
Let it out.
Sometimes it's just good for the show to be a punching bag, where if you don't explicitly say Terry Stotts should be fired, then you're not harsh enough on Terry Stotts, according to some listeners.
This is true.
I mean, I don't know much more we can say. All right. How about the billion-dollar round of golf that was played yesterday? That's a heck of a thing.
I didn't know that was that much money yesterday.
Right? Well, Andy North of ESPN on their coverage, he said something, and immediately when I saw it, I was like, wait, whoa. Like, we got to put this into perspective here. Hideki Matsuyama ends up winning the green jacket yesterday, and I don't think that, like, it was kind of a, not kind of, it was a boring round of golf yesterday. Even for somebody who loves the Masters, it was kind of like, Matsuyama was in control. We had hole number one where he went into the woods, and I was like, ooh, is the meltdown going to happen? But no, he just kind of played steady the entire time and got back on it. On 15, when he hit a 4-iron, bounced it off the green, went in the water, and then scrambled for bogey, I was like, ooh, okay. We have a 2-stroke lead with 3 to play. Yes, it's here. And then Xander Schauffele just implodes and gets a 6 on the par 3. So he was comfortable for most of the round. That was the only drama that we really had yesterday.
Now,
on the golf course.
Can I comment on Xander Schauffele real quick?
Sure, yeah, go ahead. I knew you would have thoughts.
Well, no, oh, I'm sorry. You know what? It's the young American golfer, Zalatoris.
Got Zalatoris. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he looks like a movie character.
Yeah, we've got plenty of, there's plenty of good stories that are happening. Like, Zalatoris took second. But Hideki Matsuyama, in the pressure that he was under, I don't think people realize. And I think this kind of puts it into a little bit of perspective.
You mentioned it on Saturday night, the idea of walking in the Olympics in the green jacket. Yes. I mean, you perhaps is bearing the flag for the nation.
I mean, this is not a crazy person talking, but I think a win here would be worth $1 billion to him.
You're a little crazy. But no, you're not prone to hyperbole. I was talking to David Duvall earlier. He said, Andy's right. He said, you can't fathom what this would mean off the golf course.
$1 billion round. Now, North before that was talking about the pressure of Hideki Matsuyama, where in Japan, golf is a huge deal. And he is a rock star. And people are obsessive about Hideki Matsuyama. Like, his press conferences, usually they just stand up and they do, like, you know, a couple mics in your face and the guy stands up and goes. Hideki Matsuyama has always brought out a chair because they know you're going to be here for a while, brother.
Yeah. And I think do you know the first time that he was invited to the Masters?
Yeah, when he was an amateur, right?
Yep. He was 19 years old, collegiate student athlete. and he almost didn't go. So he won the berth, or he earned the berth by winning the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. And a month before was when the earthquake hit Japan. And the earthquake and then the tsunami that killed 20,000 people. So he came back to his university and he lost a ton of weight because he survived on a diet of instant ramen.
Oh my God.
And at that point, his coach said, you know, you didn't know if it was appropriate to leave or not. Well, then as he's debating whether to go play as a 19-year-old, he started getting letters and faxes from people in his region who were encouraging him to accept the invitation.
That's crazy.
But that's been his story. He's carrying the weight and the hope of a people who needed something to look forward to, something positive to come out of a silver lining, if you will, out of a tragedy that was it's hard to even put into words the destruction that tragedy took. And so that's been his story of the Masters, is playing under this kind of pressure.
And it's been a decade since then. Like, he's been there for a decade, and that obsessive coverage of him because of what that meant for him to go and get Lo-Am there. And there've been a lot of close calls, and he's kind of like been on this roller coaster of a career where, like, it was always, he's going to get over the top. It's just a matter of if, but when. And he finally does it in the year where it's like, okay, maybe it's not Hideki. Like, it's finally one of the years where nobody's really talking about him. And that pressure before the night of the round, like, I text my buddies, like, are we going to see the Matsuyama meltdown happen right now? Because of the fact that shot number one went into the woods.
Yeah.
Right? And we've seen it before. Like, in the 2017 PGA Championship, he had a lead heading into the back nine, and he went five over. And he just went...
Yeah.
All the way down. He bogeyed on five of the final nine holes, and just plummeted down the board. Like, it's a close call, and then boom. It was cool to see. And the bogey tap in to win the Masters, it's not one of those moments where Tiger's, you know, pumping his fist, or, you know, Jack is walking it in, or, you know, the leap by Phil. But you have, like, that moment where he was just like, didn't know what to do with the pressure because he'd finally done it. And you can't, like, better guy couldn't have won it, because he's sitting there and he said in the post-match presser, he said his first thought was how happy he was for his caddy.
I know. And his caddy was the one who went back, replaced the pin at 18 and bowed to the course. It was a really beautiful thing. I am not somebody who avidly watches golf. I'm not, but that moment, that story, it was inspiring. It was hope filled, and it was captivating.
It was a really cool story to see him kind of come to get to that moment. I couldn't imagine that pressure. And they're saying, like, when Andy North says the $1 billion round of golf for Hideki Matsuyama, that means, like, it is such a big business in Japan. He will be a legend forever over there.
Yep.
And, like, they're saying that it's not, the whole reasoning behind it is, like, it's not out of the question to say that he'll make, you know, $20 to $50 million over the next 25 to 45, 50 years, because he's only 29 years old.
I know.
And he will be a legend forever over there.
I think what's so interesting too about that story is that in individual sports, we don't really associate successes and achievements with kind of this patriotism for a certain country. You know, I can't think of the last time an American athlete in an individual sport did it, and they did it for this kind of American pride sake thing. You know, I think a lot of times with Michael Phelps, it was always about, like, hey, can he get this many medals in his career, you know, shoot up that far. Like, I've never heard a story where it's like he literally was representing all of the foundations of hurt and pain and, like, striving for success that his country had with him. Like, that's something I think is missing so much in individual sports today, and definitely missing in golf, because golf is the ultimate individual sport.
When how do you attract a large swath of fans in, like, this was it for the country of Japan.
Yep.
Like, you already have a golf crazed country, and it is going to be even more golf crazed because their hero is going to come back with a green jacket. Pretty damn cool.
And this is somebody who for a decade has been carrying the hopes of Japan. In fact, more to that story of the first year that he was invited to the Masters, he carried with him more than 200 pieces of correspondence from people in the region who were encouraging him to go play.
Oh, my gosh.
And accept the invitation, and he read them throughout the tournament when he was 19 years old.
I don't hear that about Tiger. I don't hear that about Michael Phelps. I don't hear that about American athletes.
Oh, Tiger captivated the world.
But I'm saying, like, the connection with his country. You know what I mean?
To, like, carry the hope
of
a nation.
Yeah, to carry a country. Like, that, yeah. That is so frigging unique. Even in tennis, where you have guys like, say, Rafael Nadal.
Totally.
Again, tennis, a very individual sport. Rafael Nadal came from pretty poor upbringings, and he does represent Spain really well with his philanthropy. He has, like, tennis academies everywhere where he takes, you know, street youth and, like, teaches them tennis and gives them an education. But he doesn't talk about it as much. Like, I've never heard an athlete like this with Matsuyama, like, really ingrain his country into his play.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have that with, like, Messi in soccer.
See, I'm not familiar with that.
Messi? In Argentina,
about his
he is just the icon status. Yeah, I mean that. But we won't have that here in America. Like we won't, because like everything is so regionalized that you don't pull, like, we have it from state to state where it'll be like, if anybody, like, if there were a golfer that would win a Masters, if, you know, if Peter Jacobson dons a green jacket, like, everybody would have been like, yeah, going nuts over that.
Or Aaron Wise.
Or Aaron Wise if he does it, yeah.
Someone brings up, though, Naomi Osaka in women's tennis, sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
But I do think that because it's the Masters, it is one of those worldwide events that it's a worldwide event. Yeah. And so him winning that after the journey that he has had.
Kick ass.
Unbelievable. Like I said, I'm not somebody who can sit and watch hours of golf. I like it when they put the holes right next to each other of what I need to know and all that jazz. I loved that story. That got me, like, his story got me invested in the Masters.
Yeah, it's a pretty kick ass story. But the funny one is Will Zalatoris, the American. And we will have to talk about Will Zalatoris at some point, because his family has told him, if you're stupid enough to think you can play in the Masters, you're stupid enough to think you can win it.
Oh, I'm here for that logic.
So Will Zalatoris, we will talk about him, the striking blonde, later in the show. But coming up next, Monday Musings. What in sports caught your attention? AJ and Dusty on The Fan.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right. I'm rolling out something new. Monday Musings. You had a great idea. Look, we got a lot of grab bag potpourris that are floating out there on Mondays that we usually don't get to. So let's get to some Monday musings, some musings in sports that we otherwise wouldn't really talk about, but we have a reason to talk about them now.
Yes.
How about we start with baseball?
Okay.
Did I read this right? The Oregon Ducks swept the Oregon State Beavers in baseball?
You did.
Will, would you like to comment on this?
Was it the World Series? Then I don't care.
Oh, damn.
That's all I care. I will admit, I am the ultimate Fairweather Beaver baseball fan. I don't pay attention at all until they're like, hey, it's the...
In Omaha?
Yeah, it's like the College World Series. I'm like, great, where are we? We going to win this thing?
So when are we hosting? When are we hosting? Three in a row, including a walk-off error in 11 innings yesterday. 5-4 of the Ducks... finish off the Beavs, as heard on our sister station, 9:10 a.m. On top of that, this isn't like a fluky thing because the Ducks have won 5 of 6.
Yep.
Against them.
Watch out. Ducks baseball coming for you.
And I'm going to speak for Oregon State fans everywhere. This one stings a little bit more because after the Beavs won their national title, the immediate comeback was, Oregon State baseball got too good, so Oregon had to start their own team back up again, huh? So that's got to sting a little bit, right? That they've gotten a couple this year? Like, this year's the year, although they had a World Series just a few years ago?
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, it is, my knowledge of college baseball is at, like,
deep.
Lowest. Oh, no. Lowest of low levels. That's why I describe myself as that. It's like when the Ducks did bring their baseball team back, it did to Beaver fans seem like a reach. Like, oh, really? Now that you're not winning national titles, you have to come try to win one yourself in baseball. It's basically the whole excuse we give to Oregon every time, which is you just throw money at problems.
That's true. Yeah. Just go ahead and do that.
It's like, why don't we have a baseball team? Money. What? A team.
It's kind of working.
Oh, man.
It's kind of working.
I know.
Though.
Such bitterness over there.
Also in baseball, your beloved in San Diego Padres, your former employer.
Yep.
Is it fair to say that?
No.
Okay. The place you interned for.
There we go. Because I was still in the age of unpaid internships.
Nice.
So.
Like that's a whole different world that we were living in back then. They had the first no-hitter in their franchise's history. Would you like to take a guess on how many games the Padres played before they finally got their no-hitter? The last franchise in baseball to get their no-hitter?
I have no, I mean, there's 100, I don't do math, so.
Will, would you like to take a guess?
1905.
No, not even.
It's a shot in the dark.
No, we're talking about how many games the Padres have played, not a year.
I thought you said the date.
Nope. How many games have been played?
What, this year?
Nope. In Padres history, before they got their first no-hitter.
1,000? I don't know.
8,206, according to Padres no-hitter.
Well.
How the hell did you expect either of us to guess that?
We wanted one of us to do the math. Of 160 games, times how many years of the franchise.
I wasn't expecting.
AJ, who knows if they did play that many games a season back then? I don't know.
Will, I wasn't expecting you to know the number because it's obscene, but you guessed a year and not a number of games, which is, I mean, you couldn't be further off than that. I mean, don't gloss over. I asked you how many games and you said a year.
Plot twist.
In history.
Plot twist.
Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
8,206 games.
Good for the pod squad.
Joe Musgrave finally got it.
Isn't he a San Diego native?
He is a San Diego native. You know your people of San Diego. San Diegans?
Yes.
San Diegans.
San Diegans.
And they finally did it.
It's weird. Congratulations. From Grossmont. Born in El Cajon.
Where's Grossmont? How far away is Grossmont from where you live? Grew up?
Probably like 40 minutes. It's probably 25 minutes from where I went to college.
Okay, hold on. This is the most Southern California thing ever. 25 minutes. Like the number in my mind was like 25 minutes because if you drive anywhere, it's 25 minutes. It doesn't matter where you're going. It's 25 minutes. How long is it going to take? 25 minutes. It could take you 2.5 hours. Well, it would have been 25 minutes had there not been traffic.
I feel unnecessarily attacked.
That's fair. That wasn't an attack on you, and I apologize for that. I immediately came at you, and I'm sorry for that.
It is Monday. Don't have that energy right now.
My bad.
Yep.
My bad.
Take it back.
My bad.
Okay, for that, I get to do my musing now.
Yeah, get it.
4 red cards handed out in the first pro sports event to happen in the state of Oregon with fans in more than a year.
What does this mean?
Red cards?
Yeah, like what happened?
Oh, well, a few things, because there were 4 of them. So first,
I am going to have to find out what a red card is as opposed to a yellow card.
It's the next up.
Well, I know that's immediate ejection, right? But yeah. My question about that.
Yes, Dusty.
You kicked out for the next game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Charlie.
I know what a red card is then.
Oh, dear. So Simone Charlie got a red after she had a late tackle. She had a yellow earlier in the match, though, so that's why she got a red.
Ooh.
So she's going to miss the Thorns next game. Mark Parsons, the head coach, he argued with the call. This is Friday night at Providence Park, where there were about 6,000, a little more,
nice,
fans in the stands. And let me tell you, I got a little emotional.
Oh, did you? You got, yes, emotions.
Because it was like, oh my gosh, real voices, real people. I loved it. Anyway, so Mark Parsons argued the call against Simone Charlie. So he got ejected. And then a minute later, we had practically a brawl.
Not, wait.
Yeah. In the corner between Kansas City's Kristen Edmonds and Portland's Morgan Weaver. Edmonds went at Weaver. I mean, straight at her face, palm to the face, attempting like a rugby style punch. I mean, it was exciting.
We can't have that, Morgan.
No, well, no, Morgan didn't do anything. Morgan is innocent. Free Morgan.
Oh, no. Did she punch her back?
No, she said, nope, I'm out. I walk away because she's not trying to get a card. Well, then she gets a card, to which the owner, Merritt Paulson, takes to Twitter and says, how the holy hell does Morgan Weaver get a red for getting rugby tackled and then punched, all while maintaining composure?
Valid.
We will obviously be appealing this.
That's a valid.
He says that on Twitter.
That's a see, he is a great Twitter follow.
He is a great Twitter follow.
But this is, see, this is why you should have just thrown the punch.
Well, now, no, because they're appealing. You really don't want to be without Morgan, Simone, and your coach for the next game. That would be not great. They did get the win, 2-1 over Kansas City.
See, and this is what I love about, like, it's long been said. Women's soccer, 10 times more tough than men's soccer, and a fight happening in the first home game back. They're like, we got fans back? We're going to fight now. It's turned into a brawl. I like that.
Loved it. I just told you. The Thorns.
What was the score?
2-1.
Oh. I mean,
at least you didn't answer with a date.
1905.
1980.
So more red cards than goals.
Yep.
Sign me up.
Sign me up.
I'm good. And by the way, do you know soccer stuff? Do you know things about soccer?
I did play soccer.
You did?
Yeah.
All right. You can teach me some things because I am now a soccer coach.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
Yep. Yep.
Those poor children.
Uh-huh.
Are you want to hire me to root your kids on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, we're definitely going to do this because I'm going to be coaching.
Maybe I should. Will, do you want to hire me to heckle the coach?
What, to heckle Dusty?
Whoa.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, we could do that. And in fact, you know.
You want me to root on the kid or you want me to heckle the coach?
We could do it together. And we could just hit him from both sides. So you could be in the stands. Nope. Then I could get a job as a first baseman coach or as a soccer coach or whatever.
There's no bases
base
in soccer.
Soccer.
See, that's how much I know about soccer.
Oh, no.
Yeah. As a ref.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
How's that? Mm-hmm. And then I could just run along and say horrible things to Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
See, but here's where your heckling won't. Like, you'd be like, coach, you don't know what you're doing. And I'll turn around and be like, you're right. I don't know. It's kindergarten, first grade soccer. I was the head coach.
That's
was
like herding
hey,
cats. So
do you want some? The head coach was like, we need some help. I was like, I don't really know what's going on. He's like, we need some help.
If you can convince
so
all of
there.
Them to not just be like one mass clump of small humans moving
out.
Around the field, you're doing pretty good.
It's okay. My play call for that is social distancing.
Just tell them don't touch.
Just tell them to socially distance.
It's not really the same thing as in football.
You don't call plays?
I mean, not in the same way. It's okay. You'll
My
learn
set is going to be
there
social distance.
Just tell them to keep their hands off the ball unless you're the goalie.
See,
that's
a problem.
Boom, you won.
Now, my son,
oh, dear.
My son is playing on another team. I'm coaching my daughter's team. My son is, he rolls out there, and the first thing he tries to do, when they're said, like, you kick the ball, is he went straight to football like he's a holder. So he went to hold the top of the ball so somebody else could kick it. Like
no, he didn't. Next,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
He doesn't quite understand. He's like, no, I got this. I'll hold it. Like, you're the kicker. I get this. I've seen this before. I'm going to be the holder here.
Oh, that's really cute.
He's got a, it's going to be hard to unfootball him.
To go from football to football.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah. They said, do you want to coach the beautiful game? I was like, yep. I got out there, and it wasn't. It was soccer. It wasn't football. I was like,
the original football.
The original beautiful game.
Yep.
And football.
Yep.
All right. So you're going to have to teach me stuff.
Okay.
But hey,
I don't know that I have time for another third job, so I'll keep you posted on that.
We can figure it out. Good on the Thorns, though.
Yeah.
2-1. Timbers make their home debut.
Tomorrow.
Love it. Fans back in stands.
Fans back in stands. You have to love it.
Come on, Blazers. How great would... question. Do you think Stotts wants fans in the stands right now with the way things are going? With our, yes. We're looking at our text line.
The answer is yes.
You absolutely want does. Because you know what? They talk a big game right now. I don't think they would have booed last night. Yeah, they would have.
We'll see.
They would have.
Hopefully.
Right. Hey, Blazer fans, let's get you all hot and bothered right now. Is it really a surprise what Gary Trent Jr. said? It was about his time here in Portland. Here's Will with SportsCenter.
Crazy on him. That's just what he does. But once upon a time, I was the
over the weekend, Gary Trent Jr. had himself a day. He had the second highest effective field goal percentage in NBA history in a 40-point game when he shot 107.9% effectively from the field. Only second to Klay Thompson's 110%. Effective field goal percentage in 2019. And by the way, effective field goal percent is like shooting from three. Like 3-point plays are worth more than two. So if you have a really good night from three, that's how you can get over 100%. And he had 44 and a career high, and things are going well for Gary Trent. Yada, yada, yada. Well, he may.
Oh, no.
They're not going well for Portland right now. Blazers split the weekend, guys. Relax. His was against the Cavaliers, too. Blazers do that against Cavaliers all the time. What?
You're just asking for the text line to be lit aflame again.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Cool. Well, here's how he upset Rip City over the weekend. And I'm wondering, does this make Blazer fans upset when they hear Gary Trent Jr. say this?
You know, for the first time in my career in the last 3 years, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm wanted in a sense. They want me to be a part of something. They want me to help. So, you know, I can't even put it into words, to be honest with you.
Oh, that's Gary Trent Jr.'s thoughts on being a Raptor and obviously not being a Portland Trailblazer anymore.
But is that a surprise? It shouldn't be.
No, he was CJ McCollum's backup.
Right. And Gary Trent Jr., Gary Trent has played, what, 3 years? In the NBA now?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in their third year believes that they are a backup still. Right? Like, nobody comes into the league and says, oh, I know, my goal is to back somebody up.
Yeah.
No. Everybody comes in, especially with Gary Trent's pedigree, with his college experience, with his talent level. Gary Trent Jr. does not want to be, nor should he be, a backup on an NBA team.
Yeah, he came from Duke. He was a second-round pick, though.
Yeah, you know?
Everybody thinks they should start.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so for the last 3 years, Gary Trent Jr. has been told, nope, not here. Can't do it here. You're CJ's backup. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but I'm saying I understand why now Gary feels like he's in Toronto. They believe in him, not only enough to start him, but to tell him, hey, we could build something around you. We could keep you as an integral part to this franchise.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that the Blazers weren't going to be able to afford him anyways.
No, because you're not going to pay a backup the amount of money that he's going to be garnering.
But to feel like he wasn't wanted or appreciated here, I don't agree with that. He started like for a big swath of this year when CJ went down. And I think that the fan base, like, it'd be one thing if like the fan base absolutely adored Gary Trent Jr.
Fans.
Yeah, but that also kind of goes in the face of what even he was saying about Damian Lillard and his leadership style. You know, in the leadership of Dame, how everybody feels appreciated and everybody feels like their role is something where, you know, they're needed, yada, 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 and always stay ready, be ready, that kind of thing, you know. And then he goes to Toronto's like, finally feel wanted here. What? Because they traded off everybody else that was good on their roster and you're the best player now?
Well, and I think you can feel wanted and unwanted at the same time within an organization. I think Dame can make everyone feel important and valued. And then at the same time, you can read the writing on the wall, which is I'm only going to start unless somebody is hurt.
And I think that is a big key here. And that's where like people that were getting super upset and be like, how dare he? Come on. Like he was never going to be a piece that the Blazers built around, and they went into this year knowing that they probably couldn't afford him, and then he played really well, and they put him in a position to succeed enough to where he was going to make a lot of money. So they're like, well, let's just avoid this problem now and give him a chance in that opportunity. And more power to him, man, because he is going to be great. He just, if the Blazers would have kept him, they would have not been able to keep him beyond whatever date this season ends.
Just be great, Gary.
What was that?
What he does.
Oh, he's doing his...
He does his little his little rock on thing.
Yeah. Well, good for Gary Trent Jr. The people that were upset, boy. Huh.
I mean, I think what I saw were fans who were feeling like that was personal.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying, what I'm advocating for, is that was not directed at fans. He loved playing in Portland. I've talked to Gary multiple times about what it meant to him to play in Portland. And I don't think he was talking to fans. I think he was talking about the fact that he does not believe he's a backup player. He believes he is a starter. He believes he should have a chance to start. And here in Portland, he was never given that opportunity until somebody got hurt.
And now you can kind of see why the Blazers traded him.
Yep.
If he feels that way, well, that's great.
Yep. You
get a guy in who appreciates a role that isn't being one of the stars, Norman Powell, and a guy that the Blazers probably have a better shot of re-signing, even though, you know, and keeping around long-term, even though we don't know what the future holds for him either. What?
Well, I was just thinking.
Just give him a maybe?
Well, I was just thinking all of a sudden there's a three-guard lineup with Norman Powell coming to Portland. Maybe that's
two-guard lineups are great.
Maybe that's where Gary Trent is upset, though.
Yeah. And
why didn't they try a three-guard lineup with him?
Well, because you're not very good defensively either.
Well, right. But
yeah,
I could see him looking at them doing a three-guard lineup and saying, hey, I wanted to be great defensively.
Yeah. We went over the numbers, though. He was literally, and by the numbers said, one of the worst defenders in the NBA.
True.
Yeah.
True.
I think what probably is getting his goat in all this, and I kind of speculated it once the move happened because it seemed all of a sudden it was pretty darn quick, is that I'm doubting there was extensive conversation with Gary Trent Jr. in his future in Portland, with him
they
directly.
Knew. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I think that he's probably referencing all this because he's saying, like, I don't know if they really even entertained the fact that I might just resign here. That they were either thinking like, oh, he's going to ask for too much money here in the next couple months, and we don't trust him in that respect, so we want to try to get what we can right now. It sounds like there wasn't much of an open dialogue between the two sides.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm drawing that from that cut right there, because I understand more of the Blazers side of it, in that Gary Trent Jr. knows that he's worth more than what the Blazers could afford.
Well, and he definitely had no idea he was getting traded, because the dude only packed three outfits for the road trip.
True that.
He thought he was coming back.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you get that? Did you just send a box for your, like, pack up my clothes and just send them down here?
That would be a fascinating story that I would love to do someday, about just what it is when somebody gets traded. What are all the logistics that happen?
Well, I saw Evan Turner's just now selling his house.
I know.
It's been a while.
Hassan Whiteside was building a house here.
See, that's what I always think about it. It's like, if you're an NBA player that, like if you're a journeyman, I would just stay in penthouses everywhere I went.
But even that, who packs up the penthouse and moves it to the next one?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. The team has to have, the league has to have somebody.
I think the worst situation you could be in is when you're not getting paid that exorbitant amount of money to make this really a problem. Like if you were somebody like, say, Trevor Ariza, or like when Matt Barnes was playing, like, you're getting paid so much at a certain point that it's just like, whatever. It's like, I'll go move to a penthouse. I'll just go buy all new clothes there. It doesn't really matter to me. Like, I've already amassed so much money, and I'm making a good amount even on the veteran's minimum. Doesn't matter. But like, if you're a guy who, say, like in their second year,
Gary Trent Jr. is a second round draft pick.
Right. Like, you know, he's in Toronto this year, but who's to say that they're just at the end of the season like, no.
Oh, he knows somebody's going to back up the Brinks truck. He's going to get paid. All right. You can do the Allen Iverson who didn't pack clothes on road trips.
Just bought them.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's dope.
That's a different life.
I could
very
do that.
Different life.
All right. I dare you to find something that gets you this excited. AJ and Dusty on the Fan. I dare you to find something that gets you as excited as Rob Stone of Fox Sports got for Anthony Neuer and his strike. This is something else. This made my sports weekend, and it was even more exciting when just the facts came out about this guy. Anthony Neuer is 18-year-old professional bowler. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
He has the look and the body of a, I don't know, mid-40s man.
The red hair doesn't help.
No, he has a red mullet, which is a little bit long on top as well, but he parts it. He does the middle part down the middle. He's wearing an American flag shirt with a hammer on it that just says hammer across it. He's got a great look going on. And it looks like a guy who's 18 has spent a majority of his time hanging out in the bowling alley. You know? I mean, yep. He's got a look about him. Well, Anthony Neuer made a little bit of a history in his in the professional bowling tour. Take a listen to the legend Rob Stone along with Randy Peterson on FS1's bowling coverage. And just wait till you hear his nickname.
The 710 only been made on television three times. History of professional bowling on TV.
Come on, kid, do it. Goodness, the ginger assassin just dropped the 710. You bet, kid. You bet. Oh, man. Give me some oxygen and water to spare the game. Brought to you by Guaranteed Rate. If you believe it, you can do it. Guaranteed Rate. Believe you will. I believe the ginger assassin can drop the 710. Oh, man.
We have found the Bill Walton of bowling, ladies and gentlemen.
What? His nickname is the Ginger Assassin. Two, Rob Stone calls football games.
Yeah.
I've never heard Rob Stone get that excited before.
Oh, dude, that's three beers. That's three beers deep.
He got to 710. Yeah. Split Randy. He throws the Randy in there.
The name.
Which is incredible.
Dude, if you're Rob Stone and you're calling college football games and you obviously are doing somebody in production a favor because they're like, we have nobody to call this. Can you please? We're going to fly out to this bowling thing. He goes, give me three PBR tall boys.
He probably didn't even have to fly. Mm-mm. A lot of the ESPN folks are doing it from home.
A plate of nachos and I will get at this bowling thing. Let's go. Give me my prep sheet.
Get at this bowling thing.
No, he does.
This is a thing?
Like bowling.
He dabbles.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
sure.
I saw a press release.
How many more bowling things has he done in his life?
Yeah, you know, he's one of the guys. Like, he go to Rob Stone's Twitter feed, and you can see he's genuinely excited. They have the behind the scenes video of it. It goes, he's Fox Sports. He's got a football, soccer, basketball, and bowling emoji.
That's awesome.
Dude.
This is just part of him.
I love it.
Loves bowling.
I love it. I don't think I'll love anything ever as much as he loved that play or that
7-10 split. We've all been there.
That roll. Yep.
What do you call it? What is one?
What
call
is this?
That?
What is this?
Oh, I was trying to do the roll. Like,
it's the roll. Yeah,
bowling.
You're rolling, man.
I know, but it's not like that play. So what do you call it in bowling?
That frame.
That frame.
That half a frame.
That ball.
Made Rob Stone and the Ginger Assassin's year. I mean, I
enjoy where
believe.
You can, my friends. I
the
love
7-10
it.
The 7-10 split, Randy! One more time.
The 7-10 only been made on television three times. History of professional
needs
bowling.
To be a drop.
On TV.
Come on, kid, do it!
He did it!
He got the 7-10, Randy!
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
He got the 7-10, Randy! Have you ever had a 7-10 split when you're bowling?
Oh, please. Like I remember any... No. I don't know. What is a 7-10?
7-10 are the two corner pins.
Two corner pins. Yeah. Okay.
You staring down that.
I think maybe once.
They call it the stray hand split.
Well.
The big old gap in between. You just try to get there. Try to knock those two out. It's hard. Rob Stone's been there. He's tried to get that 7-10, Randy.
Well, it's only happened three times on professional bowling television.
Yeah, that's an obscure stat to have. Like, great, it's not researcher. Only three times in professional bowling on TV on professional bowling.
Well, you know why they say that, though, right? Because the 7-10 is a lot like in golf, the hole-in-one. It's, you can brag about it as much as you want, but not having proof. Oh, dude, a 7-10 split is friggin' difficult.
You don't know.
No,
okay.
No.
You don't know.
Let me tell you something. Dusty. I spent an entire summer
one time.
Mm-mm. With a 6-pound ball.
You did not.
Didn't even
this
put.
This is a lie.
Didn't even put.
This is one of those,
oh,
this
really?
One of those weird Will Darkins lies that come out of nowhere and he just made it up. But here's the thing.
No. I did it junior year of high school.
You pinky promise?
Yeah.
Here is.
6-pound ball. Didn't even put the fingers in the hole. I just did the rotate of the wrist. You know how they do it? Like you don't grab the ball and you don't.
Yeah, but you had no idea what you were doing. The 7-10. Okay, by the way, Will, how often did you go down and manually set up 7-10?
No.
No. Oh,
it just happened that way a lot.
For an entire summer.
All the time.
Here's the thing. Hole-in-ones happen all the time in PGA Tour. Three times in the history of televised bowling.
Just saying.
In the history of it. It's even harder than a hole-in-one, Will. Even harder.
Yeah, Will.
Okay.
God bless you, Rod. Can I have that by the end of the show? 7-10, Randy!
I actually need that.
Okay.
We need him doing it.
Yeah, Dusty loves that.
Dusty as
it's
Rob Stone.
It's his new
Stone.
Favorite thing.
It truly is. You know what I'm as passionate about as Rob Stone is the 7-10 split? I'm as passionate about Rob Stone calling the Ginger Assassins 7-10 split.
I'm grateful for the energy you're bringing. Yeah. Doing great, Dusty.
You got this 2 o'clock hour, AJ! It's coming up next on The Fan!
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.